Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday afternoon if you're listening live here. We are starting at a little bit different of a start time because there's something here in America called the Super Bowl that's going to be hogging a lot of people's attention this evening. So we're going on at 2 p.m. Eastern right now. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we're going to be here talking about the Elimination Chamber PLE for WWE, which is coming up next Saturday night. It feels like we just had the Royal Rumble, quick turnaround to the Elimination Chamber, and then there's going to be a big gap until WrestleMania. That gap will be filled by AEW in March with their Revolution pay-per-view. But for WWE, it's a bit of a gap there. So we're going to go on the air next Saturday night after Elimination Chamber goes off the air, taking your feedback on the final stop on the road to WrestleMania, the final PLE stop anyway on the road to WrestleMania. And it's going to be right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Same phone number to call, 515-605-9345. We'll take your feedback at the same email, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. That's an email address you can send questions to us anytime for us to answer on air the next time we have a show. So looking forward to the Elimination Chamber next Saturday. Looking forward to get people's reactions to that and their thoughts on WrestleMania. Today we're going to preview Elimination Chamber, and to help me do that, I bring on PWTorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire. Brandon, welcome to the show this afternoon. Who do you got in the Super Bowl tonight, Eagles or Chiefs?
Oh, man, Greg. I knew you were going to come at me with that. I think the Eagles are a better team, but I also just have a hard time picking against the experience of Andy Reid. It's tough. I go Eagles, but very, very hesitantly.
Interestingly, I think I'm going to pick the Eagles. I'm going to root for the Eagles, I should say. I'm going to pick the Chiefs to win, but I'm rooting for the Eagles. Ultimately, I'm rooting for a good game. I just want to be entertained. But I'm kind of hoping for the Eagles.
I like both teams, and so this is kind of a dream Super Bowl scenario for me. If my team is not going to be in the Super Bowl, then I want two teams that I don't dislike and two teams that can provide a really entertaining matchup, and we have exactly that. So I'm really looking forward to it. I say the Eagles, but I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other by any stretch.
Yeah, for sure. Just hoping for not only an entertaining game, but entertaining commercials too. I mean, that's just as important sometimes.
Yes. And the Puppy Bowl's kicking off right now, so Wrestling Night in America. You get the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah. My goodness, that's why we have no callers on hold. The Puppy Bowl is taking all their attention to it. So, Brandon, we'll do the Elimination Chamber. Probably be a short show. Nobody on hold to chat. Of course, we welcome you if you are listening live, 515-605-9345. Got a you'd vault right to the top of our list to talk to. So if you're listening live and maybe don't usually call in because you know we get the usuals who call in and you'll fall behind them, that won't be the case this afternoon. Also looking for emails, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. So four matches on the Elimination Chamber card, Brandon. Let's start with Edge and Beth Phoenix against Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley. We've heard rumors that Edge and Finn Balor may be fighting one-on-one, perhaps inside a steel cage at WrestleMania. So this seems to be just another marker to get us there, to kind of stretch out that storyline by involving the women on either side in this as well. And then you've also got the Rhea Ripley situation. You know, we already know she is challenging SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. So you'd think they want her to look strong, you know, to get to that next step. You'd imagine the heel getting the victory, the babyface wanting that ultimate revenge inside a steel cage or whatever the the stipulation will be for WrestleMania. So all signs point to the heels getting the victory, with perhaps Rhea Ripley getting the pin on Beth Phoenix. It accomplishes both things, keeps Rhea Ripley strong, and sets up a situation where Edge would want to face Finn Balor one-on-one to get that last bit of revenge.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it there. I think they've got a bit of an issue with this feud and this rivalry and this match, in that, you know, Edge has been feuding with the Judgment Day for what feels like an eternity, and in real time, it's been about a year. And I think that it's a feud that never had the weight that I think they hoped it would from the start. So for it to have extended this long is really unfortunate. And I think it kind of puts a hamper on what Edge has left to give. I mean, we've heard the rumbling sort of that Edge, that this may be Edge's last year. And if that's the case, it just feels to me like he could be better served doing something else. It seems like every single time these teams or these competitors match up, it sort of ends the same way. Edge will, you know, come out on top, or if he doesn't come out on top, then he gets his revenge in a post-match angle, and then we just continue on. And I think that's the case here. I think that to keep Rhea Ripley strong heading into WrestleMania, like you suggested, that Rhea probably gets the pin on Beth. I thought the only story left to tell with this feud was Rhea Ripley and Beth Phoenix one-on-one. And I wish that they were going that direction for Elimination Chamber. I don't know if they're avoiding it just because they want to set up the match with Edge and Finn Balor, or if it's more just that Beth isn't necessarily comfortable doing a longer one-on-one match on a premium live event. I don't know what the reason is, but either way, I think it's unfortunate that we're going back to this tag scenario. You know, it could be an okay match, but I'm not expecting a whole lot, because they haven't given us a whole lot out of this feud. And yeah, I guess the idea of Edge and Finn Balor in Hell in a Cell, which I think was originally rumored for the Royal Rumble, is a fine undercard WrestleMania match. But man, at this point, I just wish that they were getting more out of Edge.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hell in a Cell. I think I said steel cage, but I think it was Hell in a Cell was the initial reporting. And you know, without the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which, you know, Triple H in one of his conference calls kind of made the same argument that fans have been making for years, that these stipulation-based pay-per-views are often feel like, you know, they're shoehorned into feuds where they don't fit and things like that. So it would be good if they did like a Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania. Would make WrestleMania feel more important, would make the match feel more important to have it in such a rare stipulation that we've seen. But yeah, the whole problem goes back to the Judgment Day group and storyline. And even when Edge was a part of it, it didn't feel, I don't know, it just didn't feel like the gravitas that WWE's booking was giving it. And then Edge, you know, they did the beatdown angle, and that was really the one time where that felt like a big deal, where Edge was beaten down, Finn Balor took over as leader. And then, you know, now even when Edge comes back, it's still, you know, the most entertaining part of it is Dominic Mysterio, right? And so you've got Edge and Finn Balor fighting, and, you know, Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio are the best parts of it. So you're right. I think it is. It does kind of feel like a waste. If this is Edge's last year, I don't know that it is. I mean, he still looks in tremendous shape and has been able to go in the ring. But I think the other thing, too, is the matches, especially since Edge's return, have been so story-based and not necessarily the athleticism you're looking for. And I don't know if that's because Edge, you know, that's just what Edge wants to do. He's an actor now. Like, does he want to take his matches more down that road instead of the more athletically pleasing matches that we've seen even WWE turn into lately, or what the deal is. But I think the problem, too, is the matches have just – they don't have that same spark that a lot of other matches have.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest issues, too, with the presentation of the Judgment Day has been the dichotomy between the different characters. So the Judgment Day was introduced as this uber serious, you know, dark, ominous, mysterious stable, not entirely, you know, I mean, unlike the House of Black in terms of presentation, but in terms of how seriously you're supposed to take them, I think it was pretty similar. And so in the beginning, it felt like they were acting. They were playing a part. And I think WWE realized that and they pivoted. Then the addition of Rhea Ripley came, and Rhea was clearly the one being taken most seriously out of the group and the one whose push coincided with the character presentation. So Rhea has been protected for most of her time throughout the Judgment Day and has emerged as somewhat of a leader. Then you had Dominic Mysterio join the group. And initially, that sort of less, I think it took away from their prowess in general, because Mysterio was not someone who was taken seriously, either as a character or as a wrestler. What then ended up happening is that Dominic caught fire as sort of a joke character. People are hugely entertained by Dominic Mysterio because his character is unintentionally funny, because he thinks he's so tough and so serious, when in reality, everyone knows that, you know, he's going to get beat up 9 times or 10 times out of 10. So you have this huge variation in each member of the Judgment Day. Rhea Ripley is the serious main event act, but she's also saddled with Dominic Mysterio, who isn't a serious act by any stretch of the imagination. Then you have Damian Priest and Finn Balor, who I think are dragged down by their association with Dominic and the way that they play into his claims. So what you have on the whole is a stable that doesn't feel serious, and yet they're being presented in a semi-main event or main event capacity.
And I do feel like they're missing that mission statement. You know, they're missing that. What are they looking for? What are they, you know, what's their gripe? What's, you know, I feel like at first it was kind of like, you know, they were sort of left behind in WWE booking, but I think it's kind of gotten away from that now. So it's really hard to understand what their motivation is and what they're going for as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a struggle too.
Yeah, definitely. I think outside of Rhea, I mean, it's just been sort of, you know, they're on Raw to fill time. They're there to have good competitive matches, to cut promos, and to let Dominic Mysterio, you know, talk himself into a corner. But they've never really accomplished anything.
So we have Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn in the undisputed WWE Universal Championship match. And I'm curious with how things have played out this week on Raw and SmackDown. There was, after the Royal Rumble, you know, there were a lot of directions WWE could have gone in depending upon how they saw Sami Zayn. If they really saw Sami Zayn as a main event level guy, they could have found a way to have Roman Reigns face Cody Rhodes, who earned it by winning the Royal Rumble, and facing Sami Zayn one on each night of WrestleMania. They didn't do that. But they are having Sami Zayn face Roman Reigns in Sami's hometown of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, at Elimination Chamber. So this is where everything is going to come to a head. I guess my question is, Roman Reigns seems destined to win this. He's going to go on to WrestleMania to face Cody Rhodes. How do you, from Elimination Chamber on, make sure that this is not another Daniel Bryan situation where fans see that Sami Zayn was kind of discarded, and we don't know what the finish is going to be. We don't know the angle that's going to come out of this match. But if Sami Zayn's kind of like, you know, beaten and that's kind of it, and Roman Reigns turns his attention to Cody Rhodes, how do you prevent the fans from hijacking Cody Rhodes' promos and Roman Reigns' promos leading up to WrestleMania with Sami Zayn chants? I mean, we know how invested the crowd is in Sami Zayn. The reaction he's going to get in Montreal is going to make him come off like an even bigger star than he actually is to the fans who are watching. They're going to pick up on that and take that to the arenas. I thought they did a nice job this week with Cody Rhodes and Paul Heyman's promo battle on Raw. I thought that was tremendous. And I thought Cody had the line of the year so far where he's just like, I just want a challenge for the title, and everybody wants to make it yeah. personal. Like, everybody's got to bring up Dusty. Like, he's just so tired of that trope, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really well done. But SmackDown is still being built around Sammy and the Jey Uso situation and Sammy acknowledging Jey on SmackDown. So how can WWE either book this match or after Elimination Chamber ensure that fans are excited about Cody Rhodes versus Roman at WrestleMania and not disappointed that Sammy isn't going to be involved?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I think that the bubble that we all sort of live in as, you know, doing wrestling analysis and paying attention to Twitter and whatnot, I think there is a segment of that audience that has sort of drastically overestimated the demise of Cody Rhodes' popularity. I think that they're using, you know, past indicators as a guaranteed marker of future results. And I don't see that happening, at least not yet. And I don't want to say that I'm ruling out that fans turn on Cody in the lead up to WrestleMania or beyond WrestleMania. But I do think that all signs thus far have been very, very positive in the sense that Cody's getting large reactions. People seem to be into him. They seem to be pretty much on board with the push and the level of the push and the idea of him main eventing WrestleMania. And I think that's a good thing. I also think that WWE is doing a very, very good job of protecting that character and putting that character in positions to come out a winner that won't create distance between he and the fans. So I think that Triple H has been very conscious of the potential for some backlash, and he's been booking to that effect to ensure that that doesn't happen. Now, that doesn't rule out the possibility that it comes by any means. And I think, you know, what you pointed out is a clear marker that there could be trouble on the horizon. The fact that Elimination Chamber is going to be in Montreal and Sami Zayn is undoubtedly going to get a massive star reaction, probably the biggest that he's received yet. And it is going to make him seem even bigger and more over than he is. And he's very big and very over right now.
Yeah.
I think that the most important thing with Sammy coming out of Elimination Chamber is that they create a very clear and direct path for Sami Zayn to WrestleMania. I think that one of the big indicators and one of the big issues in the Daniel Bryan story, and that was a special circumstance. I don't know that there was anything that they could have done with Bryan short of inserting him into the title match that people viewed as an acceptable resolution. But this is a little different in that the bloodline as a whole is incredibly over. Jey Uso is incredibly over. He is intertwined in that Sami Zayn story and central to where it goes next. So to me, the most important thing coming out of Elimination Chamber is that Sami has a clear, defined path to WrestleMania. In other words, when Elimination Chamber goes off the air next Saturday, even though it hasn't been officially announced, we should be able to infer what Sami Zayn is going to be doing at WrestleMania. And I...
I wonder, Brandon, is that going to be, you know, they played it pretty close to the vest this week on SmackDown about Jey Uso and where his where his loyalties lie. Is it, you know, at Elimination Chamber, Jey makes that decision that he is all in on the bloodline, he helps Roman win, and that kind of, you can kind of put two and two together that, okay, Sammy is going to WrestleMania to either face Jey Uso or to face Jimmy and Jey, potentially with Kevin Owens. You know, that's the name that's been rumored here.
Right.
So, I mean, is that a scenario you see happening?
I think that's the most likely of scenarios right now. I was trying to come up with a suitable, sort of acceptable way to envision Jey Uso siding with Sammy and then heading into WrestleMania where they both have a clear direction. And I don't think that it works. If Jey definitively sides with Sami Zayn at Elimination Chamber, then you're introducing a third person into this mix in that Jey is also over and you can't necessarily guarantee that the crowd isn't now going to be interested in seeing him challenge Roman Reigns for the championship.
Yeah.
I don't think that you want to introduce two potential people who could Bigfoot Cody Rhodes. So to me, having Jey realign with the bloodline for now serves two purposes. One, it gives Sami Zayn a very clear direction for WrestleMania and a direction that I think has been sort of looked at as a really strong possibility for months and something that can be booked and sold as a main event. I think Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens against the Usos for the Undisputed Tag Team titles could main event night one if they wanted to. I'm not saying that they necessarily would, but they could do it. And I think based on the way that the card is shaping up right now, it would be the rightful main event of night one. So they could go that direction, and that would set Sami Zayn up for WrestleMania, set Kevin Owens up, set the Usos up. The other thing that it does is it extends the bloodline storyline beyond WrestleMania, in that we don't see the definitive end of the bloodline in any, you know, in any certain terms, because I still think at the end of the day, a Jey Uso turn on Roman Reigns is coming. And I think the fans want it, and I think that it's going to do incredibly well when it happens. So by realigning Jey with the bloodline temporarily, coming out of WrestleMania where you assume that probably everyone in the bloodline has lost their titles, tensions are running extremely high. Roman Reigns starts, you know, being terrible to Jey again, looking down on him, treating him poorly. Maybe Sami Zayn comes back into the mix and starts talking to Jey and saying, hey, man, you know, look, I know what you did to me. I know you turned your back on me. But at the end of the day, we've got a common enemy here. And eventually Jey sees the light. He turns on Roman. And then you've got a huge Jey Uso-Roman Reigns match for whatever premium live event you want coming up.
Feel like we could do an entire podcast about this storyline. I mean, there's just so much fantasy booking to be done. There are so many twists and turns. And for, you know, I've never, certainly in the time that I've been, you know, covering wrestling and probably even dating back to my time as a fan, I can't remember a storyline that has gone on this long and yet still has, feels like it still has so much life left into it. You can still introduce future characters. You can turn characters like Jey Uso or whomever. And it's just wild to think that we're, you know, 2.5-3 years into this story, and there's still, it just feels like there's still so much left to go.
Definitely, yeah. And that doesn't even, I mean, the situation that I laid out doesn't even talk about what they could potentially do with Solo Sikoa, who I think has been a revelation for that storyline. I mean, they brought him in as a guy that was still fairly green and hadn't done a whole lot in NXT, and he's taken off. I mean, Solo Solo is clearly viewed as a top heel in that company, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. He's certainly going to have a very special place in that storyline going forward, and I think he's done a remarkable job in terms of his in-ring performances and his facial, the way that his facial expressions and his body language sells, you know, developments on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, for sure. We do have a phone call to go to, and it's our friend Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. So we'll break up the Elimination Chamber preview by hearing from Ryan. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on a early Sunday show.
Yes. Definitely. What's your first question for us tonight?
My first question is on Sami Zayn. Is there any possibility that with Vince McMahon being back, I know he's obsessed with this storyline of the Montreal Screwjob coming back into the Sami Zayn match as an out of him losing that match?
If you absolutely want to kill a town, sure. If WWE has no plans to ever come back to Montreal again, absolutely. You know, Vince is back. To the best of our knowledge, he's not running creative. That would not – I don't see that being a decision that Triple H would make for as much confidence as fans have in Triple H and for as much as, you know, ratings have seen an uptick lately, like – I don't think you'd want to mess with that by running what would no doubt be a controversially received, and that's being generous, controversially received finish. I just don't see any scenario where that's a good idea. I think it's probably, you know, it's been mentioned often enough that it's probably going to be haunting me in the back of my mind, Brandon, while this match is going on. But I just, realistically, I don't see any scenario where that's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't necessarily know how you get there with, you know, the circumstances aren't the same in that the only on-screen authority figure that we have is Adam Pearce. And, you know, if Adam Pearce is screwing over Sami Zayn, is he joining the bloodline? I mean, from a storyline perspective, it doesn't work. And then I can't imagine that, you know, first of all, as far as we know, Vince McMahon is still not involved in creative in any significant manner. And I would argue that the TV would, you know, make an argument in favor of that belief. I don't think that the typical Vince McMahonisms that we're used to seeing from weekly WWE TV that disappeared when Triple H took over have not returned. So I'm not inclined to think that Vince McMahon is influencing creative or week-to-week TV in any meaningful way. And so I don't think that storyline would find its way there. But even if he were, I just wonder how you get to a conclusion like that without an on-screen authority figure and barring Vince McMahon himself returning to television, which I don't think is going to happen, even if he were, you know, behind creative right now. I don't see how you get there.
And if someone – I could see someone pitching that in a creative meeting as a joke. Like, if someone pitched that seriously, like, I would probably fire them. Like that's a fireable offense to pitch that finish at this point, at this stage. So that's just my totally unbiased view of that potential finish, Ryan. Ryan, go ahead, hit us with your second question.
My second question is on the Elimination Chamber match itself. If they were to do, instead of Austin Theory defending the United States title, having Gunther defending his IC title match, you think that would be a better match and better use of the Elimination Chamber, considering that they're pushing Gunther as like this Iron Man based on his Royal Rumble performance lasting like 73 minutes? They like have him go and like first in the chamber and beat all five competitors in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think kind of Brandon, it's a toss-up. I understand them going with Austin Theory here. I would totally understand them going with Gunther and him defending the Intercontinental Championship inside the cage. So to me, it's a coin flip. And they landed on Austin Theory, which is fine. You know, on the other hand, if you they've done a really nice job lately making both of those titles feel super important to the level that I don't know the last time they've done that. So, you know, Gunther, because of his run in the Royal Rumble, I don't think you really needed to I don't think you needed to add on a run in the Elimination Chamber to build that title up. I think his run in the Rumble did that, and his constant defenses on SmackDown did that. So I think, yeah, now you give the opportunity for the United States Championship to get some key exposure through the Elimination Chamber match. So I'm totally okay with that as well. But, I mean, realistically, Brandon, I could make arguments for either one of those titles being in an Elimination Chamber match this year.
Yeah, I have a couple of reasons why I presume they went with the United States title over the Intercontinental. And you brought up a good one as well, Greg, in that, you know, Gunther had that stellar performance in the Royal Rumble, which helped not only establish him, but also bring some prestige to the Intercontinental title just because the champion lasted that long. I think that it's twofold if we kind of look at the direction that they're headed in for WrestleMania. The one is the fact that Gunther's strongest opponents right now seem to be the potential of Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. And rumors have suggested that the plan is for a triple threat at WrestleMania between Gunther, Sheamus, and Drew McIntyre, which I think is an excellent match. They could steal the show at WrestleMania if they're given a significant amount of time. And those three are going to beat the living hell out of each other. So if that is the match, I think it's going to be a ton of fun. And by not putting Gunther in the Elimination Chamber, you eliminate the idea that they're going to cross paths. Right now, Drew and Sheamus are, you know, tied up in the tag team division. I think that if they were to have done a Elimination Chamber match with Gunther and the Intercontinental title, it would have seemed conspicuous and a little curious to have just left McIntyre and Sheamus out of that. So by not having him in that match, they avoid that issue. The second thing is that I think that Gunther has proven himself to be a strong enough champion that I don't think you want to have him lose the title in a multi-man Elimination Chamber match where you can get away with a cheap finish. I think when Gunther loses that title, it's going to be in a one-on-one or, you know, a triple threat situation where, you know, there's just three guys beating the hell out of each other. Whereas with Austin Theory, I mean, we've seen him lose that way before. They are not afraid at all to make him look like a coward, even though they are booking him to be, you know, a top-end semi-main or main event act. I think that for the kind of character that Austin Theory is, it makes a lot more sense if he were to lose the title that perhaps he's eliminated earlier or he is, you know, not involved in the final fall. And he can cut a bunch of promos about that to get himself, you know, back in the title picture. And that leads me to my final point regarding that is that indications would suggest that we're headed toward Austin Theory versus John Cena at WrestleMania, providing that John Cena is available. That is certainly not a match that needs the United States title, and I would argue that it's better off without it. So if that's the case, the Elimination Chamber is a good opportunity to get that title off of Theory as we head to WrestleMania.
And I think you hit on the big point, Brandon, which is this is all about setting up WrestleMania. And it really all depends. We're not really privy to WrestleMania plans. We can read the tea leaves and we can read the speculation that's out there and the rumors, but ultimately it comes down to booking backward, right? They have their match for Austin Theory at WrestleMania. They know what they want Gunther to do at WrestleMania. And as you said, you know, if what they're doing with Gunther at WrestleMania doesn't lend itself to him defending the title in an Elimination Chamber match, then that's probably the reason he's not defending his title in an Elimination Chamber match. It all comes down to hyping WrestleMania. Ryan, back to you for your third and final point for us today.
My final question's on the Iron Man match between Daniel Bryan and MJF. Do you think that match has the possibility to be in the same league as a Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar Iron Man match, or do you think it's going to fall a bit short of those matches.
Well, depending on who you ask, the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Iron Man match is one of the most overrated matches in professional wrestling. So I guess if you're of that belief, then yes, Brian MJF can certainly match that and has the potential to match that. I thought Brian Danielson's match this past week on Dynamite was tremendous, you know, for a TV match and things like that. I think that Brian MJF potential to be great because I think Brian Danielson is very good at putting together matches like this and helping to put together matches and coming up with ideas. And I think this is an interesting storyline, Brandon, because you've got MJF as the heel in some ways coming into this match, despite being champion, as the underdog, because this match type is going to favor Brian Danielson. So it's all about how can MJF survive 60 minutes with Brian Danielson. MJF rarely wrestles on TV. That's part of his character. You know, so his cardio is going to be brought into question and things like that. So it's going to be really fun to see. I think it's going to be a really different Iron Man match than we've seen other matches of this type. And so that's what's really intriguing to me about this, Brandon.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I have so much trust in Brian Danielson and to a lesser extent MJF. I mean, I think that MJF has earned people's trust in terms of what he brings to the table in big match situations. I think we've seen time and time again that he has had really, really strong main event matches when the situation calls for it. And I get the criticism of him not wrestling enough. It doesn't bother me personally. I think it makes him feel special as a champion who only wrestles on occasion. I think that as a result, people, you know, greatly look forward to his title defenses and his matches, and they feel bigger as a result. I'm really looking forward to this, and I say that as someone who's going to be covering Revolution and am already concerned about the length of the show with AEW's propensity to go long on pay-per-view and add into that a 60-minute Ironman match. I think it could be a marathon or Ironman situation for the fans watching at home and in the arena.
Yes.
But I do really trust Danielson and I trust MJF. I think what you said is absolutely correct. Danielson is known for laying out these matches in an intriguing and a crowd-pleasing way. And I just think at this stage in his career, when Danielson has been so clear that he just wants to go out and wrestle, I mean, he's going to be so motivated. I mean, Danielson has said he doesn't care if he ever wins a match again and he just wants to wrestle against quality opponents. He doesn't care where it is, if it's on TV, whatever. He just wants to wrestle. But I think that, you know, as any competitor would and any professional would, he's going to be cognizant of the bright lights, the fact that they're main eventing a pay-per-view, the fact that, you know, this may be one of the only times that he has left to main event a pay-per-view. I mean, he's said himself that he's going to be winding down and going to a lesser schedule. So I think he's aware of that, and I think he's going to go all out here. I have little concern. I think it's going to be a really, really fun match.
All right, Ryan, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling us up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
All right, Brandon, back to the Elimination Chamber. We go to the men's chamber. This is the one that Ryan referenced. Austin Theory, the United States champion, will be defending his title inside the chamber. Seth Rollins, Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, and Montez Ford are going to be part of the chamber. So the nice thing about doing a secondary title in the chamber is you got guys in there who, you know, if this was for a number one contendership for the for Roman Reigns' title or even for that title, you wouldn't see some of these guys in here. You wouldn't see a Bronson Reed or a Damian Priest or a Montez Ford in here or a Gargano. The only one you might see is Seth Rollins. So it gives them an opportunity to show off at a – with the bright lights on a big stage in a major match. So that's what I think is really cool about this. Guys like Montez Ford and Bronson Reed especially, you know, Ford has had a couple singles matches lately. There's been kind of teases off and on that he might be going in a singles direction at some point. But, yeah, this is you kind of alluded to the fact you think Austin Theory is going to lose here. Do you have a favorite amongst those that are in the match that you think could come out victorious?
I really don't, and I think that's what kind of makes it fun. I'm certainly not ruling out that Theory just retains here and they do a title match with Cena, or maybe Cena isn't available and they're going in a completely different direction. I don't know. But I think that the Cena Theory match works just as well without the title. And so if that is the direction, I don't mind them moving it somewhere else so that you can get a title match on WrestleMania that involves two other wrestlers that might otherwise not make the card, or at least have a reason to be one-on-one on the card. So I like moving the title off of Theory here for that reason. But like I said, I think that's part of the reason why the match itself is kind of fun on paper, because I could make a case for everyone in the match. I think that, you know, Seth Rollins is the obvious pick. He's the biggest star in the match. He's a former U.S. champion. You know, he's going to be heavily featured at WrestleMania. You can go in that direction for sure. Then you can make the case for someone like, I think with Damian Priest, you know, you want to make the Judgment Day strong coming out of Elimination Chamber, give him a match at WrestleMania opposite of what we presume will be Edge and Finn Balor, keep him occupied. And then for the guys that are sort of dark horses here, I mean, with Montez Ford, Bronson Reed, and Johnny Gargano. I mean, all of them have been presented in ways that make you think that Triple H is at least interested in making them a big part of Monday night. And Johnny Gargano has been involved in a less than desirable and less than stellar storyline as of late, but he was working opposite of The Miz. And I mean, we know what WWE thinks of The Miz. And even though to the fans that may have not felt like a very satisfying storyline, WWE tends to give The Miz stories that they believe in and wrestlers that they believe in him facing. So even though Gargano's main roster run so far has been less than stellar, I do think the fact that he's been so heavily involved in The Miz is probably a net positive for him. Same goes for Bronson Reed. I mean, not a ton of appearances so far, but certainly a big guy that Triple H saw something in NXT and someone that they could want to throw a title on and get behind. And then finally, Montez Ford. I mean, we know that Ford has been a standout of the Street Profits. We know that he's got a lot of fan support behind him, and I think that he's a guy that you could just decide to throw a title on and see what happens. So, you know, there's levels to how viable I think each guy is as a potential winner, but there's no one in this match that I just look at and I immediately go, oh, there's absolutely no chance they go here.
Do you think it's time to see what Montez Ford offers as a singles wrestler, or do you think it's too soon for that? Because, you know, to a certain extent, with a guy like Ford who has a high ceiling, you don't want to mistime that when you send them out on their own as a singles wrestler, right? You don't want to send them as a singles wrestler and then have them wallow in the lower card and really not have anything for them to do, or, you know, get them stuck in a secondary feud where fans end up seeing them permanently and, you know, you kind of can't get them out of that rut. So do you think that WWE is ready, or are you ready to see what Montez Ford can do as a singles wrestler right now, or do you think it's not time yet?
I'm ready for them to test the waters. I say that not because I don't think that Ford and Dawkins don't have anything left to give. It's more so that it seems like WWE doesn't have anything left to give them. I mean, they've sort of run the gambit of placement on card from, you know, longer standing impressive tag team champions to sort of the guys that you throw in every backstage segment when there's a party or a poker tournament or something along those lines. And I think they're both so much better than that, and I think they should be more prominently featured than that. And at this point, it feels like maybe the only way to do that is to have them go their separate ways for a while. And I am not of the belief that you need to turn one of them. I'm more so hoping that if they do opt for singles runs for Montez Ford especially, but for Angelo Dawkins as well, that they can just both continue down the path as a babyface and you know, have them have a segment backstage where they just agree to go their separate ways for a while and they still support each other. Maybe they tag team occasionally when the situation arises and we see that friendship continue to hold strong. I don't think one of them needs to turn because I think they're both good, strong babyfaces. And I would much rather see the Street Profits be put on hiatus than be broken up.
And I don't know that there's a lot of fans who would just be dying to see Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins feud. You know,
no,
I don't think there's a lot of fans who would want to see that even if they go their separate ways as singles wrestlers. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, too, like, you know that Montez Ford is sort of the Shawn Michaels in that scenario, and not to say, like, that Dawkins is Jannetty, just to say that from WWE's perspective, they are more interested in the trajectory of Montez Ford. So I just don't think that there's anything there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. The women's chamber, the winner will face Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania. You have Asuka, Liv Morgan, Nikki Cross, Raquel Rodriguez, Natalya, and Carmella. So sort of a mix of people here. A lot of big names not here. You don't have Ronda Rousey. You don't have Bayley. You don't have Becky Lynch. Is this match hurt by not having some key people who you would think would want to be a part of a title match at WrestleMania in this match?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. It feels very lackluster, and it's sort of indicative of where the women's division is at beyond just the top competitors. When they had four women announced for this match, and then they announced the match to determine the fifth on SmackDown, in that small window of time before they announced another, I think it was another Fatal 4-Way on Raw to get the final competitor. I was thinking, and I think a lot of people were just thinking, well, whoever number six is, whoever the last woman to be announced is, that's the winner. Because I think that everyone kind of thought that it was going to be, you know, a bigger name, somebody either returning like Ronda Rousey or someone we hadn't quite thought of yet. It just had to be a bigger name, and it wasn't. I mean, I think that there are only two women in this match that can win, them being Raquel Rodriguez and Asuka. Of the two, I very much favor Asuka, and I hope that that's the direction they go. I think that she had a really impressive return at the Rumble. I think that the refreshing of her character is a welcome sight. I think the crowd is behind it. I don't know that they want to boo her, so they may have trouble if they're looking to turn her heel against Bianca Belair. But I just don't feel like Raquel Rodriguez is quite there yet, especially as a potential WrestleMania challenger. And I think that I think that it's possible that they may have resigned themselves to the women's title matches this year not feeling like main event level matches. I mean, in years prior, it felt almost like a foregone conclusion that a women's title match could and probably should main event night one. And I don't think that's the case this year. I don't think they have it with either potential title match. They may be in a situation where whatever Becky Lynch is doing, whatever Ronda Rousey is doing, may feel like the biggest women's match on the card. And I guess that's okay. But I am a little sad for the women's titles that, you know, they're probably not going to be focal main event matches this year.
On Raw, you had a Fatal 4-Way qualifying match, Carmella, Candice LeRae, Michen, and Piper Niven. And I felt like as I watched the end of that match that WWE took the least interesting route of all of those.
Yeah.
Like, I would have liked to have seen any of the other three women in this match aside from Carmella, which is, you know, we've kind of been there, done that, which we even acknowledged on screen at one point. But this could have been an opportunity for Piper Niven, who was given a new name for the Royal Rumble and given, you know, as much, if not more, of a refresh than Asuka got, and really could use an opportunity to kind of reestablish herself. You got Michen, who's in the same boat. You know, they've given her a new nickname and that apparently they're going with now. You know, Candice LeRae, we haven't seen her in this environment with this kind of opportunity on the line before. I just feel like there were a lot more creative possibilities with any of those wrestlers over Carmella. So I don't know if they just felt like they needed a heel here instead of another babyface or what the decision was about that. But I do think Asuka, when you look at this list of women, Asuka certainly is the one that stands out as the one who would present the most threat to Bianca Belair's title. I mean, when you look at all of these other women, Liv Morgan has gone a little more hardcore. She's been SmackDown Women's Champion, so she's got that pedigree. But if you want fans to really think that Bianca Belair's title is in jeopardy at WrestleMania, it's got to be Asuka, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. And if this were an Elimination Chamber match to determine the number one contender for the Raw Women's title at Money in the Bank or WrestleMania Backlash, whatever, then it's probably Raquel Rodriguez. You know, she's being primed for a title match at some point. They're trying to get her over, or really any of the other women. I mean, you know, you can put really anyone in that scenario on a B-level pay-per-view, but it's WrestleMania. And for WrestleMania, you've got to have your well-established or strong up-and-coming women's act facing one of your women's champions. And Asuka is the only person in that match that even comes close to fitting the bill. I mean, like you mentioned, Carmella is established to some certain extent, but we also saw a lengthy feud between Bianca Belair and Carmella with less than stellar results. So I can't imagine they're going to go back to that match. Carmella's character was tweaked a little bit, but more than anything, it's sort of a return to her old character. So, yeah, I don't see any scenario where it's her, and I don't see a scenario where it's anyone other than, you know, Asuka or the outside shot of Raquel.
Well, as I said at the outset of the show, we will be covering Elimination Chamber. We always do here at PWTorch.com. You can find live results and analysis on PWTorch.com. You can find the, soon after the show goes off the air, the roundtable review with editor Wade Keller hosting and various folks of the Torch family who contribute to that roundtable in audio form. And as I said, right after the event goes off the air, we here at Wrestling Night in America will be going on the air, and we'll be taking your live calls and emails in reaction to the show. It's one of my favorite shows that I get to do every month is the PLE reaction show. That's where we usually get a lot of new callers, a lot of our regular callers giving their thoughts on the show as well. So we'll have a good time next Saturday night after Elimination Chamber goes off the air, pwtorchdailycast.com. Brandon, thanks for joining me today at an unusual time, and I'd like to give you the opportunity before you go to plug your work for the Torch.
Yeah, sure. So I cover WWE PLEs as well as AEW pay-per-views for PW Torch. I provide the alt perspective report, so usually opposite of editor Wade Keller. You can always find my very lengthy, very detailed reports right on the PW Torch website and, of course, PW Torch VIP. I also am a frequent co-host with Wade on the usually Raw or SmackDown post-show Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, Pro Wrestling post-shows. and occasionally via AEW Dynamite post shows as well. I also just recently, if you happen to miss it, did a episode of Frank Petiani's WWE Then and Now, along with Rich Fan. We talked about Royal Rumble 2003. It was a really, really fun show and really cool to reminisce about the Rumble 2003, which was in Boston. And I happened to attend 20 years ago this year. So I went through my old 35 millimeter photo archives and pulled out a dozen pictures or so to scan. And I shared those on Twitter shortly after we did the show to give a nice little look back at, you know, how terrible individual or personal photo taking was back in those days. So we had a lot of fun talking about that show and comparing it to present day WWE. It's a really fun show in general. The Rumble was, and of course Frank's Then and Now is a great time. I've been on it several times now. So definitely check that out if you happen to miss it. You can follow me on Twitter at @BLeClaire12, and yeah, always happy to join you for this show, Greg.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me this week, Brandon. We'll have you on again soon. All right, and that'll do it for Wrestling Night in America on a special Sunday afternoon edition. And again, we'll talk to you next weekend, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.